Welcome to lesson 165 in FSE University series. We're in book four. We're looking this time at a major topic that is many non-believers and skeptics will point to this one as what they claim is their reason for why they don't believe God exists. We're looking at the fact that evil exists. But what we're going to look at today is the fact that the very existence of evil is an evidence that God exists. But first, let's start with the argument. It goes all the way back to Epicurus. You can find Epicurus actually mentioned in the Bible. When you go to Acts, the book of Acts, chapter 17, this is where Paul is at the Mars Hill in Acts 17, and he's with the philosophers at Athens. And in chapter 17, verse 18, it says, certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him and said, what does this babbler want to say? He seems to be proclaiming foreign gods because Paul was preaching to them Jesus and the resurrection. So here we have a mention of the Epicurean philosophers. And here's their founder. And here's his argument about God not existing or not being able to account for evil. Is God willing to prevent evil, but he's not able? Then he's not omnipotent, all-powerful. Is he able, but he's not willing? Then he's malevolent. In other words, he's evil himself. He's not good. Well, is he both able and willing? Then whence comes evil? Where does evil come from? Is he neither able nor willing? Then why do you call him God? There's the paradox or the argument for why God doesn't exist. So let's look first of all at Habakkuk, just one example throughout the Bible of many, where God clearly says he can't stand evil. He hates it and he hates wickedness. Now let's click on the screen. The challenge then to Christians, if God exists, why is there so much evil and suffering? That's what Epicurus is saying. Well, here's a challenge back from Christians. The reality of evil is actually one of the strongest evidence that God does exist. Let's look at premise one. If good and evil exist, there must be objective moral laws by which people can tell the difference. Premise two, objective moral laws exist because unlike animals, all people have intrinsic value. What do we mean by intrinsic value? People are valuable just because they're people. Right? If you look at that first yellow star, it says in it, are people everywhere, regardless of time, culture, or situation, intrinsically valuable? The answer is yes, because we're people. Why is that? Because we're made in God's image, and every person, that's why we have laws around the world, everywhere, people recognize people are not animals. So now let's look at premise three. For objective moral laws to have value, there must be an intrinsically worthy moral law giver. That's because you can't have laws that place value on human beings coming from human beings because we're morally flawed. So where do these this value come in that separates people and makes them so valuable? In other words, look at the second yellow star. If people ought to be intrinsically valuable, where does this oughtness come from? We're tying together here lesson 165 with the previous lesson 164, which was the moral argument for God. And again, we're talking about oughtness. Everybody just said they agreed people ought to be valuable. Why? Premise four. This moral lawgiver must by nature have the highest moral value. Well, you're not going to find a person who has the highest moral value. The only candidate is God. I give this example. I've walked through it many times in front of large groups and audiences. When someone asks me this question, I give a scenario. I said, okay, let's suppose I'm watching TV. I have my 2-year-old son sitting next to me. And we're watching, and the dog comes in the living room. Dog walks up to my son, and before I can stop him, the dog mauls my son in the face. Dog just digs in and just does a terrible, terrible thing to my son. What should I do with the dog? Now, I asked an audience one time of, oh my gosh, well over 1,000 people. And everybody started raising their hands and people said, put the dog down. And I'm like, what? Put the dog down? Kill the dog? Yes. Why? It mauled your son. That's okay. I said, so let me give another scenario. I'm sitting watching the TV. I've got my dog next to me. My two-year-old comes in the room, kind of crawls over, gets in the dog, starts mauling the dog in the face, tearing the dog up. What should I do with my two-year-old son? Everybody starts laughing. And I said, well, I should put it down, right? Or get rid of my son. People are like, no, no, you can't do that. I said, wait a minute, time out. Why not? You just told me with the dog, I should get rid of the dog, put it down. But with my son, I don't. I said, what's the difference? Right away, they got my point. I told them, I said, basically, as much as people don't think about this, your dog is your property. It's just a dog. Your son is your blood. He's your flesh. He's part of you. He's intrinsically valuable just because he's your son. What do you think the Bible teaches? The exact same thing. God has made people in his image with intrinsic value and dignity. And therefore, this whole idea of evil is such a strong evidence for God, because it can't come from people. It comes from the intrinsic value we know exists within human beings. Nobody who's watching TV, they're watching the Nature Channel, and they see a male lion come out of the brush and grab a cub from a female pride and run into the brush again and tear the cub apart. Nobody goes murder. Nobody says that lion murdered the cub. And why is that? Because it's the Nature Channel. We all know the difference. But there's no way somebody could come steal a baby from a family and hack it up and murder it, kill it, and not be called murder. We know the difference. It's obvious. And the idea of evil is a strong, powerful, compelling evidence, argument for the existence of God. That's lesson 165, Faith, Substance, and Evidence.